Welcome into another edition of the Dana Victory Podcast, only available on musketeerreport.com. I'm Rick, he's Dan, and Dan, this is episode number 51 of the podcast.
That's correct. We're recording on May the 23rd. A lot of news to get to today. Rick, the best number 51 of my lifetime that played baseball, and actually, according to Baseball Reference, the greatest number 51 of all time, the big unit, Randy Johnson. I'm sure you approve of that.
Yes. Well, you know, before we were coming on air, I wanted to go with Jonathan, let me be fat and pitch Broxton. You wanted to go with the short Japanese right fielder that slaps singles all over the place in Ichiro. We had to compromise. Randy Johnson's a great number 51. You can't argue with that. I mean, I'd have to say he's the most dominant pitcher of my time.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Rick, we've got a lot of topics to hit today. We're going to start off by giving our hot takes on the recent developments in scheduling, the Big Ten Big East Challenge, the Crosstown Shootout, the Wake Forest Skip Prosser Classic, and other things. We'll then move on to a quick discussion of the Chris Mack contract extension, which was announced last week. We'll talk about Larry Austin, who sort of in a surprise move became the sixth member of the Xavier 2014 incoming class. We'll talk a little bit about Xavier's schedule over the summer and what you can sort of expect, how these guys are going to mesh together as they move toward the 2014-15 season. And then last but not least, we will discuss some of the targets for the 2015 and 2016 recruiting classes. And you've got some interesting insights into how the philosophy on those classes may have changed in the last few weeks. But let's start with the scheduling. And we'll hit the UC game. Obviously, everybody wants to hear, you know, our takes on that. Actually, that's probably not true. But let's talk about the Gavitt games first, because I think this is an interesting development. And this is something that Mario Mercurio kind of hinted at a couple years ago, or last year, when Xavier first announced they were joining the Big East and talked about the opportunities that were out there with Fox Sports One.
Yeah, and I think when everyone sees this, the big thing is Xavier, Ohio State. Could it happen? And initially, I was quick to shoot that down. But the more people I talked to and the more information I got on this, the more it sounds like they're not really going to be able to control this. I mean, ESPN and Fox Sports One weren't going to put the ridiculous money they put into this without being able to choose the matchups for the most part. So from what I'm told, you can't rule out a Xavier Ohio State matchup, which would be obviously very entertaining. But there are several other Midwest teams in the Big Ten that I think a lot of fans would like to see Xavier play. So I think this series is nothing but a positive for everyone involved. I think it's going to be great exposure, especially for the Big East, the new Big East. And I think it's going to be a lot of great matchups for college basketball fans everywhere.
Well, you can bet your bottom dollar that Georgetown and Maryland will be a significant part of this. Right. I feel like this series is almost built to get that game back going. But yeah, I mean, there are a number of teams that you would love to see Xavier play on the road or welcome to Cintas Center. I mean, either of the Michigan schools, Indiana would be a great matchup. So even if it's not the Buckeyes, it's still going to be a marquee matchup, and it's going to be, you know, I mean, I know there's going to be eight games. Every team is going to be guaranteed 6 out of 8 years. But you would think if Xavier can maintain their position in the middle to top of the Big East, that they would be almost an automatic invite every year. And that makes life so much easier for Mario Mercurio as he sets up the schedule, because there's another big time, high major, nationally televised game that's absolutely penciled into the schedule every single year. So I think it's absolutely a great news. I mean, you think about some of the teams that X could have the opportunity to play. You think about Wisconsin. And you think about a resurgent Nebraska program, Illinois, Indiana. I mean, there's just a ton of teams in the Big Ten that would be attractive matchups. And you're also now taking the number one and the number three KenPom conferences from last year and ensuring some inner matchups between those two leagues on a year-to-year basis. So it can't help but improve the strength of schedule for both those leagues.
Yeah, it's going to be a great thing from strength of schedule. And like you said, from Mario's perspective, to where he's just not going to have to go out and find and create these marquee matchups for both home and away. I mean, it's going to help in both cases. So I'm definitely looking forward to covering this as well, because the games, there should be several good matchups throughout this next several years here.
Yeah, and one of the interesting things is that a lot of the pre-existing rivalries that exist between Big East schools and Big Ten schools, specifically Marquette, Wisconsin, Nebraska, Creighton, and Rutgers, Seton Hall. Don't forget Rutgers is in the Big Ten next year for reasons that defy any reasonable explanation. But those are actually going to be outside this. So those series will continue, but we're also going to get additional matchups between, you know, say a Marquette and a Michigan State, or a Xavier and an Indiana, games that I think are going to lead to national interest. So this is certainly a good sign, and it's great for the Big East to be aligned with a conference as dominant in basketball as the Big Ten.
Yeah, and I think that's big, because Xavier could schedule big time games on their own. I mean, this makes it easier for Mario, but it's not a huge deal in the sense that Xavier needed this. But I think the Big East did kind of need it, and I think it does help get some more national exposure, get a couple games on ESPN. Whether we want to admit it or not, it hurt last year not being on ESPN for the Big East Conference. So I think this is a good thing all the way around.
All right, well, that does not start this year. That will start in the fall of 2015. So looking at the schedule coming up for the upcoming season, the big story, Rick, is that the two-year experiment of having the Crosstown Showdown game at US Bank Arena is mercifully over. Can you talk a little bit about what went on behind the scenes that led to this decision?
Dan, first of all, we just got to go back to Brian Snow's hot take on this subject matter a few podcasts ago.
As for the future of the game, I did a straw polling last week of folks with a clue of what's going on. And it was basically split three ways between the three options of cancel campus and US Bank. What was interesting to me is no one I polled thought, you know, like I gave, you know, I just said, you know, here's three options. Which do you think it'll be? A lot of people responded, well, I think it'll be A, you know, stay on campus, or B, get canceled. Or I think it'll be C, US Bank, or B, get canceled. No one said the game definitely not getting canceled. To me, it's just, I don't see where there's wiggle room to make this work. One side really wants one thing. One side really wants another. And there's no gray area, because the gray area compromise is what one side doesn't want. So I just don't see how, and everyone's pointing to money and this and that. I want to be Mike Graham. I want to be Santo Ono walking into your athletic department saying, yeah, I know you guys want it this way, but we decided, screw you. That doesn't go over very well. College presidents, they don't do that.
Yeah, but if you want your job, you might. Like, you're forgetting who holds the power. If the presidents want to play the game will be played. You're giving the coaches too much credit.
Theoretically, yes, but the presidents don't like to step into that domain unless they really, really, really have to.
I think this might be something they really, really have to do.
Because here's the thing. I had someone who knows tell me he thinks Xavier cares about this game less than UC does at this point.
Oh, I agree.
So who's really going to be pushing for it to happen?
Well, I'll just say this. Part of why college basketball is great from a fan perspective is rivalry games. And it may not make a major difference to the health of the Xavier program if the UC game went away. But if in 2 years Xavier lost on a semi-permanent basis the Dayton and Cincinnati rivalries, I mean, I'm sorry, I would rather watch Xavier play Dayton than Alabama. That may go counter to what the power ratings say, or their you know, NCAA placement. It's probably not what Mario Mercurio would want to do, or Chris, or any of the other guys. But to me, those local rivalries, especially against peer schools, historical rivals like Dayton and Cincinnati that haven't gone completely down the toilet like Miami has, are still important.
No, this is BS. There's no canceling the shootout. I don't care if they play Dayton ever again or not, but there is no canceling the shootout. This game means more to me than any sporting event that's ever been played in Cincinnati. I suffered through a lot of terrible Bengals and Reds seasons, but the one thing you could always count on as a Cincinnati sports fan was that this was going to be a crazy game. No matter who you cheered for, no matter what you watched, whether UC was ranked number one, whether Xavier was considered the mid-major, or whether Xavier was making runs into Sweet 16s, this game was going to be unpredictable, throw the records out, crazy crap was going to happen, and it was going to be one of the events of the year as a college basketball lover. I'm not willing to let that go, and I don't think ultimately these universities are either. Here's the thing. Mick Cronin has been complaining year after year because people keep challenging him about his non-conference schedule, and he'd lean on the Big East and say, we got to play such a tough conference schedule, you know, you can't schedule all these losses and everything. And he'd also say, you guys don't realize how tough it is to schedule. It's not easy to get a big time team to come into UC and want to play us. It's tough to schedule games. Well, guess what? This is one you don't have to worry about. This is a team that's going to be pretty good every year, that's willing to do a home and home with you. You don't have to worry about scheduling it, Mick. And Mick is completely soft in his approach. Last year, all you heard was Mick wanted this game gone. He didn't want to play it. And he didn't care whether it was at US Bank Arena or Xavier. He didn't want to play it at all, period. And he was definitely never going back to Xavier. Now, he says everything's in play. He says maybe we should look at moving it back into January a little bit to make it a bigger event. I know you said it's posturing, Brian, but I tend to believe it. I think they have softened their stance over on the UC side because, one, they need this game more now more than they ever have. Neither side needs it. Let's not fool ourselves. Neither team needs to play this game, but UC needs it now more than they ever had. It'd be stupid to let it go right now.
Well, I don't disagree. Here's what has to happen for this game to continue. They have to agree where to play it. They have to agree when to play it. And they have to agree what to call it. When has these two schools in the last 25 years agreed on anything?
Dude, but you're adding the first and third thing in there like those are actually things that aren't already decided. I mean, this game has been scheduled every year. You always have to find some time to play it. It's not like they completely disagree on when it's played necessarily.
I compare this to the divorce couple who, like, the mom wants to do something to piss off the dad and the dad wants to do something to piss off the mom.
I kind of agree with that.
And I really don't think the other side cares as much as they just want to piss off the other side.
I think that's kind of true.
But for UC, Snow, I mean, if Louisville does manage to get out of the ACC after this year, you know, they've lost their big rivals too. So, I mean, you're if nothing else for UC, Xavier's 13,000 through the gates at Fifth Third every other
that's
year.
That's the thing. It's so convenient.
And that's got to be worth something.
You're guaranteed a strong non-conference game. You're guaranteed a sellout crowd every other year. Why the hell would you let this go to waste? It's so convenient. It's given to you. What other game can you guarantee schedule that's going to sell out at UC right now? There's not one. There's not one team in the nation that would guarantee sell out UC that you could schedule.
We're making rational. No, but these are rational arguments. And I think what Brian is saying is that at heart, the actors here, at least at this time, are irrational.
Yeah, I do get that side of it. I don't disagree with you, but I think this is my point. I think some cooler heads are going to prevail. If all you're saying is the two coaches want to spite the other, that's fine. But at some point, the ADs, the presidents, the cooler heads will prevail and say, look, guys, this is a lot of money. This is a lot of opportunity. It's stupid to throw this away. It's a lot of history. You know, they're the caretakers of the game, as Chris Mack said. This game is bigger than them. They give it back when they move on.
Rick, you have a lot more faith in them as people, as negotiators, than I do. I have 30 pages on a Word document on my computer detailing the last 20 years of this debacle. And all it comes down to is screw him. It's his fault.
Yeah, there you have it. Snow always on the money with his takes on these types of things. Obviously, he had a good beat on this one. But in all seriousness, this is awesome because I don't think anyone wanted the shootout to go away. And if I've ever cared about anything more in this town sports wise, that's been going on like this, usually I'd rather just have the storyline. I don't care what it is. Just create the controversy so we have something to talk about. But in this case, I was going to be really upset if the Crosstown shootout didn't come back. So I am thrilled that it's coming back. It's even more interesting that UC was the ones that eventually had to cave here, or specifically Mick Cronin had to cave here. And it made sense because there was no reason to play this at a neutral site. It lost everyone money compared to what they would get having it on campus. Plus, you lose, you have a neutral game now in your schedule, despite the fact that it's really not neutral, and you lose that home or away game from season to season. So I think this makes a whole lot more sense. So it's good that Mick had to give in, but I think it makes for the most interesting part of this to me is the dynamic that it creates over at UC. Because we've talked so much about, you know, the divide between Xavier administration and Chris Mack, and clearly, you know, they're on the mend there, and Chris has signed his extension, which we'll talk about a little bit later. But Mick Cronin has been in the process of trying to renegotiate his contract and trying to get an extension. And I know they had been sort of talking numbers and things had been getting worked out while this whole Crosstown shootout thing was going on. So I know Mick's not happy about the result of the Crosstown shootout being back on campus. I know he never had any intentions on playing in the CentOS Center again. And I'm really interested to see what plays out now with his contract situation.
Yeah, certainly this was a situation where UC really had to blink, given the positions of the two sides as we understood them, say, 6 months ago. But I do think it's interesting that this was another example of as Brian talked about, of the top-down decision being made. This was the presidents of the university. This was Father Mike Graham and Santa Ono had a big role in making sure this game continued. And you know what? I'm glad they did, because at some point the adults have to make a decision. The guys that are the guys that are so focused on the emotion involved in it and what may have happened at CentOS Center 3 years ago, the brawl, the negative publicity that was caused by that. But at some point, cooler heads had to prevail, and people who didn't have pride on the line from taking a hard line on an issue had to step in and make the decision, because the game benefits everyone. And I know there are people from both sides that say, oh, we don't need this game. I think those people are foolish. I think they're fools, frankly. This is not professional sports. This is college sports. And college sports are, to a big extent, about rivalries, about regional pride. And that's the way it's always been. Xavier and UC have had a great rivalry over the course of, you know, I guess for some periods it wasn't that great back in the 60s when UC dominated, the 60s and 70s. But at least over the last 30 years, this has been a hugely competitive rivalry. It's been a good thing for the city. It keeps a lot of buzz around the schools. And moving it back to the neutral site, just from to the campus sites, just from a dollars and cents perspective, it's about value to the season ticket holder. I mean, what really, if you're a UC fan and you're losing Xavier and Louisville off the schedule, what's the point of buying season tickets? Why would you commit to going and seeing UC play Campbell when you know that you can a la carte go buy a ticket for the SMU game or for the UConn game?
Well, so, and you had to think that played a big role in this.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely it did. And that's why I always said the only way that I could see US Bank working on a long-term basis is if somehow they were able to include that game in both schools' season ticket packages. Then maybe you could make it an event where everybody was bought in. But under the circumstances, you know, this is the best result. And it's a 10-year contract. You know, this is going to continue this way and will continue this way into the future, even after probably both Mick Cronin and Chris Mack are gone. And it's just a good thing generally for the city. Now, one interesting thing, Rick, and maybe you can weigh in on this, is the timing of the game, because in the upcoming season, the UC home game is going to be played in mid-February in the middle of the conference schedule, which is a bit of a throwback to when it used to be played back in the early 90s. And then the following season, when it returns to Xavier, it's going to go back to mid-December. So we're actually not going to have a Crosstown shootout in calendar 2014 and two shootouts in calendar 2015. Do you have a opinion on how this is going to work with the Big East schedule? Do you think it's a good thing, a bad thing, or is it just it's worth it to have the game back on campuses? I don't really care when they play it.
Well, I would assume the compromise here was that UC wanted it later in the schedule and Xavier wanted it earlier, and that's why they're agreeing to do it depending on where it's being hosted. When Xavier hosts, it'll be earlier in the season in the non-conference schedule, and when UC hosts, it'll be in the conference schedule. And the simple reason is because we saw the Big East last year. It is a grinder. You are playing a tough game every single night. I don't think Xavier's all too happy about inserting a game like UC, which is going to be just as tough, just as physical most years as any Big East team, especially with the style that Mick Cronin has played during his tenure. From UC's perspective, I could see it making a lot more sense, because I do think this game is better when it's played later in the year. For whatever reason, this area, and maybe it's just simply that there's so many college football fans and professional football fans, don't seem to really pay attention to the basketball season until the new year, when the football season is kind of winding down. And I do think for the city's perspective, from the buzz surrounding the game, from a money perspective, this is probably best for the Crosstown Shootout for it to be played during the conference season in February. I personally kind of like that about this. But from Xavier's perspective, if you're Chris Mack and you're his staff, I'm sure you're concerned about the fact that you've now got to insert this high emotion, high energy game where we've seen this affect teams a few games after the game ends. You know, we talk about it. Do you have the hangover? Does it help you or hurt you to win or lose the shootout? We've seen it go both ways, but I don't think you can deny that there is some type of emotional drain or impact from this game after you play in it. And whether that's a positive for your team seems to depend from year to year, but I think it definitely has an impact on your team for the next few games after it.
Yeah, I absolutely think that's true. And I think history has borne out that Xavier has tended to struggle. And I think UC as well in the game after the Crosstown Shootout. So we'll see how that plays out. But to me, it's worth it to have the game back. If it has to be played in February, it has to be played in February. Hopefully the Big East will be a little bit more flexible with the way it schedules around that game. Maybe they start the conference schedule a few days earlier or something like that, so Xavier's situation is not completely untenable. But you know, there were Big East teams that played high profile non-conference games during the conference season last year. St. John's played Duke, Georgetown played Michigan State. When you get the opportunity to play that high profile game, you do it and you soldier through. And Xavier in the past has taken big in the A-10 days, one of Mario and Chris Mack's scheduling philosophies toward the first couple of years that Chris Mack was the coach was to play their quote unquote bowl game, where they'd have a high profile
SEC usually
non-conference road game right smack in the middle of the A-10 schedule. They played at Florida, they played at Louisiana State, they played at Georgia. They won all three of those games, which helped. But that scheduling philosophy was something they liked because it let the team get used to that routine, playing an unfamiliar team at a strange venue. It was almost like a dress rehearsal for an NCAA tournament. So those games worked out for Xavier in the past. I guess the one positive is, Rick, that you know, going to Clifton, this is something that's, you know, we're talking about a 5-minute drive. It's not like it's a major travel issue. So, but I got to tell you, I can't imagine Chris Mack is looking forward to that week and a half where probably Xavier will end up having, you know, four games in 13 days, one of them being the Crosstown Shootout. And just because of Murphy's Law, they'll probably have to play, you know, at Marquette 2 days later or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, but from a fan's perspective, just think of, you remember the Georgetown and the Creighton games at Cintas last year? I mean, imagine a couple games like that being sandwiched in between the UC. And that's going to be a heck of a stretch of Xavier basketball from a fan's perspective. Now, they lose a couple games, it's not as fun. But, I mean, from a standpoint of getting your money's worth and going to see good basketball games, it's going to be an awesome season.
All right, Rick, before we leave this topic, I want to ask you a question. As we said, the game will be at UC in February of next year, and then back at Cintas in December of next year. Will Mick Cronin coach another game at Cintas Center? Your guess.
That's a tough call. I will say he does. The only thing about Mick Cronin that I just think is going to be hard for any school to win him over is the fact that his daughter is here in Cincinnati and she's not going anywhere else. And I think that's why ultimately UC will be able to get something done. But if I were them, I'd be very careful because I can't imagine he's happy at all about the way the Crosstown Shootout thing went down. And I can't imagine them doing I can't imagine them doing as well as him in finding a new coach. They don't have the money to hire someone with any type of credibility or established record. So they'd have to go young. And I just don't know who that would be right now for him. I don't think they have someone groomed for that position. It'd be really interesting if he were to leave in the next year. But ultimately, I think they get something done. Dan, I think the funniest part about this Shootout thing, though, is the fact that it's back to being called the Shootout.
Well,
you mentioned the adults being in the room and finally making adult decisions. I wish they would have acted that way a few years ago when they were so insulting to us as a public that they would change the name because Shootout was just too whatever they deemed it to be. I don't even know. I still don't understand that whole decision, but it's hilarious to me that they would go back on something like that.
Well, it certainly is kind of comical, the knots we tie ourselves into with language. But Rick, so you add UC onto the schedule for next year just as sort of a reset. Xavier's playing in the Wooden in Anaheim. That's going to be three neutral site games. They have a locked in home high major game with Alabama. We know that they're going to be playing Missouri in a home and home. So they have locked in road games for next year at UC, at Missouri. So that's a total of six games out of the 12 non-conference games. They also have announced that they're going to be playing a home, I assume, bye game against Florida Gulf Coast. So that brings it down to five more slots to fill. Now, you'll notice, for those of you that maybe haven't paid attention to the news over the last 2 weeks, that I didn't mention Wake Forest. And that's because, as was announced this week, there's been a change to the format of the Skip Prosser Classic. Can you just run through that real fast?
Yeah, Dan, they're not going to play it this year. They're going to pick it back up the following year in Wake, and then they're going to play a home and home with 2 years in between every time they do that. So it'll be home and home, then 2 years off, then a home and home, then 2 years off, et cetera. And they'll continue to play the remaining years that they had on the contract, which I think was like 6 years left or something like that. But both sides said that they want to continue this past that for the foreseeable future with this format. And I think the big thing was just a little bit more scheduling flexibility for both sides and not playing that same game over and over. You mentioned where they're kind of at with the schedule and the games left that they need to fill. One thing that I think has to be on the radar at this point, and I don't have inside knowledge, but just kind of reading in between the lines, losing this Crosstown Shootout means that there's no longer that marquee neutral game. You have the neutral tournament games, the three that you mentioned, but you're not going to have that marquee neutral site matchup that you had with UC, which was not really a neutral game since it was still in the city of Cincinnati. But now I would think, you know, when we had Mario back on the podcast a few months ago, he mentioned something about potential neutral site games. I think one of the ones he mentioned was like a game of Charlotte. And so I think that's something to look forward to in the next couple of weeks when they get down to announcing these final few games. Obviously, there's some bye games left in there, but I wouldn't be surprised if we see a somewhat big neutral site matchup being announced as well.
Yeah, and Charlotte probably wouldn't. I mean, that wouldn't raise too many people's eyebrows, but I believe they've got a downtown arena that's opening up in the next couple of years, and Mario has mentioned the possibility of Xavier playing down there and then hosting them at Cintas Center, a little bit like when they played Duquesne at the Penguins Arena in Pittsburgh rather than on campus. But I would say that there's a possibility here for Xavier. And I think that Mario, if I'm putting myself in Mario's shoes, and I know that if you follow the Basketball Travelers Board, you know this is probably true. But I think X is really focusing on trying to get another high major series started at home this year, because right now they've just got Alabama as a home game from a big conference. So, you know, maybe a home and home that starts this year, and or, you know, one of those marquee non-conference specialty games, you know, a carrier game or a potentially something at Madison Square Garden or the Prudential Center, similar to a few years ago. If you remember, Rick, it was a bad memory. But when Xavier played Duke at the Prudential Center in New Jersey, and or the Izod Center, I think it was called at the time, and got completely run off the floor. But that sort of big, high major neutral site game is, I think, what Xavier is fishing for right now. Something that's got some attractiveness to a CBS or to a Fox flagship network or something like that.
Yeah, and
I think the other four games are likely to be additional buy games because X just needs to fill out the schedule. They need to make the money that the home dates at CentOS Center lead to.
Right. And of course, you obviously need to win a few games with this young roster that they've got coming back as well. So it's going to be interesting to see what that final, you know, I agree with you. I think there's one big one out there still. And just putting together some of the pieces, you know, the flexibility has been created in their schedule with the moving Crosstown Shootout back to campus and not playing the Wake Forest series this year, that I think we'll definitely see, like you said, either a pretty big home and home that they enter into or a game at a neutral site that would be a marquee matchup. So it'll be interesting to see what the next few weeks hold as far as announcements go.
Yeah, and I would love to see, I mean, when you think about what kind of school would you like to see Xavier play in this game, I would love to see, and I'm just going to throw it out there, I would love to see a home and home with Wichita State.
Yeah, I think that's a game a lot of people would like to see with the recent success the Shockers have had. It's just, you know, they're going to have a high RPI for one. They're going to be successful. So it's a great game to play from a standpoint of getting your numbers right when it comes to RPI and things like that at the end of the year, getting your strength of schedule up. I think that's a can't lose. But obviously, I'm sure they're a game that's on a lot of people's radars right now with the success that they've had.
Look, we know Mario listens to this podcast, so that was just a little subtle suggestion.
Good try, Dan.
All right. Okay, so we move on to the next topic. This week, finally, we got the official word about Chris Mack's contract extension, a two-year extension. You know, terms of it were not disclosed other than the duration of the contract, but our understanding is we're talking about that salary bump that we had discussed, as well as an increase in the compensation for assistant coaches and support staff. Rick, it just feels like this kind of closes the loop on a topic that we've discussed a great deal over the last several episodes of this show. I mean, is there any reason to believe that that anything has changed now, or are we still just sort of on the same track that we've seen over the last couple months since Mac turned down the Wake and Cal jobs?
Yeah, I mean, I still don't think those were like ultimately the right jobs for him. So I don't think this means that if next year the right school comes calling for him, that he doesn't take that next job. I still think that's certainly a possibility because there are bigger and better things out there, and there is, you know, I don't know how long anyone wants to stay in one place. But that being said, you've seen all the things written the last week or so about Chris and why he loves being in Cincinnati and Xavier making him feel wanted. They're all saying the right things. I think Xavier has done a good job to try to smooth things over as best as possible. I think one thing that stands out to me about this is that we've crushed Xavier for their public relations a lot over the last 3 or 4 years with the different things that have gone on. But I think they're doing a pretty good job right now. They've gotten pretty good publicity for this move, and they definitely should. I sort of wonder, though, and I kind of want to get your take on this, because I think a lot of times fans are more hypersensitive to the negative things that are said about their team in the media, that with the sustained success the basketball program has enjoyed, and the fact that there's not, I know people are kind of upset at times about the fact that there's not a Xavier voice per se in this town. I mean, obviously Lance and Mo, the two main sports talk guys in this town, grew up UC fans, that I almost wonder if Xavier kind of has earned the benefit of the doubt because they're not always in the limelight in Cincinnati sports talk. And to me, that talk usually is pretty negative. So I think it's kind of interesting that something like this happens. And although the conversation on the Xavier side has kind of been like the administration has screwed things up, they need to get this right, and it's like finally they got it done, when you go and you look at what the rest of the media in the city is saying, it's very much like, well, look at Xavier doing things the right way again, locking Chris Mack up. Doc's writing articles about Xavier makes Chris Mack feel wanted, and he's going to be the coach that redefines what it means to stay home or stay at your alma mater. to me, that's kind of interesting, the dynamic there that goes on, because I don't think you see that with other teams in Cincinnati, even with UC. I think that the slant is much more negative and the view is much more jaded on a lot of things by the media members in the town.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, one of the things that I've always thought about XU basketball, based on my experience, you know, as a fan, as a, somebody who read the message boards and then, you know, having a blog for two or three seasons, is that it's not a big fan base, but it's an extraordinarily plugged in fan base.
I agree.
That a Xavier fan, there may not be as many Xavier fans. I mean, when you look at Cintas Center and there's 10, you know, there's 10-2 in there, that represents a pretty decent percentage of the total number of Xavier fans in the United States. Whereas, like, you go to Ohio State, maybe they have 18,000 in the building. That's a very small percentage of the total number of Ohio State fans. But I think that, and I think as a result of that, Xavier fans are a lot more plugged in. I think that, you know, I know that the readership of my blog, I know that the listenership of this podcast demonstrates that there's a large number of people who are very keyed in and want the up to the minute information and commentary on Xavier news and what's going around the program. And I think that demonstrates that the Xavier fan base is very plugged in, even though maybe the mainstream media, even though maybe the people who are out there that are the quote unquote opinion makers aren't. So I agree with you. I think that's true. I think that there's not a great deal of depth of knowledge. And I think Xavier has always actually gotten a better shake from the national media than the local media, and has probably gotten portrayed in a better light by the local media than maybe what was actually going on if you were there on a day-to-day basis, if you were following the stories. So it's a good thing. It's a good thing for X. But I do want to caution people, because anytime something like this happens, you see that Doherty article, which was just, I mean, the reality is Chris Mack was close to taking the Wake Forest job, and he was close to taking the Cal job. And if it comes up next year that Tom Crean gets fired and Indiana comes with a bucket load of money, he's going to think very hard about taking that job, and he may take that job. The fact that he's an alumnus of Xavier, the fact that his family's from here, it is not a get out of jail free card. Xavier is going to have to deal with these issues every single summer, and that is a good thing. And that is the thing that people need to get beyond, is it's a good thing when people are constantly trying to hire your coach, because that means you're doing the right things, your program's headed in the right direction. And you know what? If after next year Chris gets an opportunity to go to a big school for a godfather type offer like Thad Matta got, like Sean Miller got, and he decides to go and Xavier hires a Travis Steele, they're going to keep rolling. So from my perspective, it's great that they got this positive publicity. I don't think it's particularly meaningful. Some of the commentary that's been out there, I don't think the game has changed as far as Xavier's concerned, but I think it was an important step by the university to establish some continuity and to get the compensation level up on par with peer institutions. And you know, this place has Xavier as a program, has the infrastructure, has the tradition, has the momentum, that it's always going to be attractive to coaches on the upward swing of their career. And I think it was a necessary move. I don't think Chris Mack is going to be here for the rest of his life. As Brian has said, you know, nobody does that. I mean, everybody's going to leave eventually, but I think it's a good thing, all things considered.
Yeah. So I think ultimately kind of the wrap up here is that really nothing has changed, like you said, since we talked about, because these things were being negotiated when they got him to turn down the Cal job. If you guys remember last time we were talking, I mean, there was clearly some move made by the administration to say, we're taking care of you, we're taking care of your assistants. There are some type of numbers exchanged at that time that convinced Chris to stay, certainly. So I don't think much has changed since then. But the good thing is, like I said, I think they've gotten a lot of positive publicity within the last few weeks since they announced this, or the last week, I guess, since they announced this. And I think that'll continue a little bit. And more importantly, which we talked about the last three podcasts, I think they kept Chris Mack intact for this year going forward, keeping this huge recruiting class. They added another recruit during that time. I think that was huge, and that was the key. And we've kind of already hashed out, so no reason to go back into it. But yeah, not a lot's changed, but the publicity is still a good thing.
All right, so let's talk about Larry Austin, who's the sixth member of the incoming 2014 class, committed a couple weeks ago. A kid who had been committed to the University of Tennessee, three-star prospect, point guard, had been committed to Tennessee when Quanzo Martin left Tennessee for Cal, decided to reopen his recruitment. Xavier, I don't think, had ever been involved with him prior to that. They got involved during that 2 to 3 week period that he had reopened his recruitment, and now he's coming to Xavier. He'll be on campus at the end of next month. Rick, talk me through how this accelerated recruitment worked. It reminds me a little bit of Brandon Randolph, in all honesty, with sort of the speed that it developed. And what's your overall conclusion at this early stage about the recruitment of Larry Austin?
Well, it's definitely a different situation than that. I know Snow went pretty hard stance on the fact that Xavier's staff hasn't been watching him, but it's different from Brandon Randolph in the sense that Brandon Randolph was in California and Xavier literally had never heard of him up until the point that they started talking to him, and then like 3 weeks later he was committed. Larry Austin is a name. I watched him 2 years ago in Chicago because Xavier, he was a name on Xavier's radar. I mean, they knew who he was. He was an Illinois kid, obviously. They knew about him. They had somewhat recruited him. They had sent him letters. I think, you know, Travis Steele had probably had some contact with him at some point. But ultimately, just what kind of won their guy. He liked other schools, committed to Tennessee, and Xavier was looking at other kids. So the fit just wasn't there. But as it turns out, you know, they get down to the situation where they're looking and need a true point guard in 2015, or at least someone to be ready in 2015. It didn't necessarily have to be that class, but they were planning on looking for the best point guard they could get in 2015. 2015 turned out that it wasn't very strong with point guards, especially, you know, really good true point guards. There's definitely some combo guys and some scorers, but they kind of already have that in an Edmund Sumner and even a guy like Brandon Randolph. So I think when they saw Larry, the whole thing happened with Quanzo Martin taking the California job, Larry is back open. That was kind of a name they saw, they inquired about, and Larry was kind of like, yeah, I'd like to be recruited by Xavier again. And they picked back up there. And now I agree, they probably haven't really tracked his game a whole lot, but he came in and, you know, they were able to, he was able to play open gym with the kid, with the players on the roster currently. And, you know, I think he did really well against those guys, and they ended up getting the commitment from him. So what he brings is he's about 6'2-ish, 6'3 maybe, a strong kind of solid build with long arms, and he's brings toughness. They don't have a whole lot of that. They have guys who are finesse players, who are good shooters, but Larry is truly tough. I mean, he's a Dante Jackson or Stanley Burrell type of defender, and I think he can be a lockdown at the one or the two when it comes to defending. And I think he's a guy who, although he can't shoot, he can get into the lane and make plays. I don't think he's a super skilled guard. I think he's a good ball handler, maybe not great, but I think he can get into the lane, and whether he's finishing or finding teammates, I think he makes plays and he makes things happen because he plays with an aggressive attacking mentality. And I think when Xavier kind of looks at what they do in the ball screen offense, and he's good in ball screen situations, I think he fits what they wanted. Now, whether it pans out, we don't know. That guys all the time don't pan out. We think they're perfect fits. So whether he's going to be great, I don't know. I know Brian Snow's not super high on him. I haven't seen him in 2 years. I thought he was pretty good 2 years ago when I watched him. He was playing on a really good team. But all the video and all the things you read about him sound like Xavier went out and clearly they weren't in a position where they had to get somebody or they were desperate for a guard here. They went out and they said, we don't really like what we see in 2015. This guy seems to fit what we want. He fits some deficiencies. He fills some deficiencies that we currently have on our roster. Why don't we bring him in? And, you know, again, I don't understand why people get so worried sometimes about these situations, because we've seen how these things play themselves out. Right. I mean, we know what happens if guys end up not panning out. They look to go elsewhere. They look to transfer. So if he's not good enough, fine. So be it. You had the open roster spot. You had the open scholarship. And he's a guy who clearly has some strengths that your team currently doesn't, you know, your team currently needs.
Yeah. I mean, I think if you were to boil this guy down to a tweet or something like that. It would be he's a work in progress offensively, and he's a top level defender at the point guard position. And that's a skill set that's not part of this incoming class. I mean, as you mentioned, you know, Trayvon Blewett probably it will be an adequate defender at best. JP McCura, you know, he's got the athleticism, but hasn't shown the ability to be an elite defender. Mackinday London, Edmund Sumner, both physically slight. I think O'Mara probably will be able to come in and play decent defense to start out, but that's one area where this incoming class maybe has some deficiencies. So filling those up with Larry Austin is good. Also, the issue with, I mean, I read a lot of places where people were really indignant about this move because I guess there was a thought that Xavier would bring in an impact transfer. And I guess my response to that is, well, first of all, if they do get an impact transfer, there's no reason they can't take that kid. I mean, there are still potential moving pieces on this roster, first of all. The second thing is that what really is the opportunity cost of taking a Larry Austin at this point? I mean, let's say he comes in and he can't hack it. Well, he's going to move on to a place that's closer to his skill level. But the upside is immense because if Larry Austin comes in and he's able to play top level defense from day one, he's going to get rotation minutes potentially. And I mean,
well, and more and importantly, you have him. I mean, and more importantly, he has a year under his belt for when you really need him.
Right.
In 2015.
So, right. And I guess from a Xavier perspective, as you said, they looked at the 2015 class. There's not a whole lot of point guards that fill their needs. And those that do exist are being recruited by literally everyone. Look at the way that major programs descended on Devontae Graham, a kid that we talked about on the last show, when he received his release from Appalachian State. Yeah. I mean, it was like wolves on a piece of meat. And it turned out that Kansas of all schools, one of the most legendary programs in basketball, ended up securing his commitment. He may start at point guard next year. So that just shows that a lot of schools are point guard hungry. And this incoming class of 2015 is so weak in that position that teams needed to address that hole. And that's what Xavier did here. So yeah. You know, is it a gamble? Yeah, but it's not like it's a huge gamble.
Right. And so is every recruit that they've ever taken. So,
exactly.
I mean, every recruit is a gamble. And again, I think when you got to look at what position the staff was in, they weren't desperate. They're taking this kid because they're going, hey, he fits exactly what we kind of needed or we were looking for. And we like him better than the kids in the next class that we were going to recruit instead. So why don't we just take him and give ourselves one less scholarship to work with the following year? The only other thing I would add is, by all accounts, he's also super high character, really good kid, really good grades. I think they also look at it from a perspective of, if you're going to add one more guy into a group that you feel really good about right now, remember, these are all Chris Mack's guys that he's kind of handpicked. I think they feel really good about the chemistry and makeup of this locker room. I think if you were going to bring in one more guy, you had to make sure that he fit in with that. And he wasn't going to be someone who was a risk in that way. And by all accounts, Larry is not that type of guy. But by all accounts, he's a great kid, super high character, great team chemistry guy, and his teammates love him. So I think that's another part of this where the staff looked at it and said, yeah, this is a guy we can't pass up on right now.
Rick, can you weigh in on – this is a question I think you and I have discussed, but I don't think we've discussed it on the air necessarily. It seems like Xavier is really prioritizing at this point. Let me phrase that a different way. They're avoiding the academic risks now. They seem to be really focusing in on guys that are good basketball players, but are also guys that are definitely going to be available and who have a history of being coachable and a history of being coachable and being successful as players. I mean, you look at the incoming recruits, and I think at least three of the six guys won state championships this year with their high school, and Mackinday London, you know, won a national title with Montverde. Do you think that's a legitimate statement to make, that Xavier is focusing more on those intangible issues right now?
Well, I think every coach is kind of different in that sense in what they really desire when it comes to personality traits and things like that. I mean, obviously Sean Miller wanted a little bit different type of a kid. He wanted extreme toughness. And I think that sometimes is a good thing, but when you go too long that way, you kind of look at some of the issues it presents. And also when you're taking kids that are academically at risk, you see the issues that's presented the last several years. And so I think there is something to be said for the fact that he wants to make sure he has guys that aren't being ineligible or don't have to end up going prep or whatever the case may be. Not that that's always a negative. I mean, you sometimes don't get a Jalen Reynolds if you don't do something like that. I mean, that's sometimes the way a school like Xavier has to recruit. But I do think they're also the national profile of Xavier continues to raise. They've continued to recruit better year after year. Chris Mack's staff has continued to elevate the way that they recruit to the point that they're kind of not having to recruit as many at-risk kids. Now it's not, can we get a kid who's good enough? It's either take a kid who's not good enough, but he is a good kid and gets the grades, or take a kid who's good enough, but everything else is questionable. Now you don't necessarily have to do that. Now you're talking about a Trayvon Blewett. When you can go in and land a kid like that, who's a high level recruit, but he's also a great kid by all accounts and gets good grades, well, you're in a different spot. When you have the ability to land kids like Trayvon Blewett, then it just changes the game recruiting wise in general. So I think it's kind of, yes, there's more of an emphasis. Yes, Chris Mack wants to make sure he's got his guys in and good kids, and that's what he prefers. But there's also the fact that Xavier continues to raise their level of recruiting to the point where they don't have to take as many at-risk kids just because they're able to recruit kids who are flat out good enough and good character and good grades and all of the above. They're able to compete with high major programs now for recruits. I mean, I remember when Miles Davis committed and it was a huge deal because Pitt had offered him. I mean, now I think when people look at if Pitt is the only other offer for a kid and it's like Pitt and Xavier competing, I think most people would feel good about Xavier winning that recruiting battle. So things have definitely changed just within the last few years when it comes to the type of kids that Xavier is consistently recruiting and the type of schools that they're consistently battling with for recruits. And I think that's a big part of why, yes, the conversation has kind of changed, but part of it's just that they're able to recruit better kids.
Well, certainly going into this season, transition will be a major issue. Yep. Talking about six freshmen. You have a transfer coming in, turning over, you know, seven of the 13 scholarships on the roster, losing Samaje Christen, your leading scorer, best player from last year, losing Justin Martin, your second leading scorer from last year, Isaiah Fillmore, another starter. So that makes this summer, I think, more critical than ever. And that's why I think so freshmen recruit to campus in about a month. I think it's June the 22nd.
Yeah.
And then the Musketeers will have the opportunity, as I understand it, to have 10 practice sessions prior to their departure for the Brazil trip in early August. So what Xavier is going to get an opportunity to do is during that period where most schools are, it's a down period. Guys will be playing in the summer leagues. Guys will be doing individual workouts. But Xavier, meanwhile, is going to get a chance to gel as a team a little bit and see those players, you know, get those guys used to playing with each other in an organized way. No disrespect meant to the Devereaux League, which is,
of course,
you know, a favorite of both of ours, but a little more organized than that, perhaps.
Live action.
We're going uptown. So I think that's going to be a critical thing this offseason to get those guys gelled together, to get, you know, these newcomers used to playing with a D Davis, used to playing with a Matt Stainbrook, used to the abilities and maybe the weaknesses of their teammates now. And so it's going to give Xavier, I think, a little bit of a leg up. And hopefully what we'll see is a team that doesn't take as long to learn to play with one another when the season starts in November.
Well, and you may see a team that takes as long as other teams have played, but the big problem is this team may need longer. So that's why it's so key that they have this Brazil trip this year, because I mean, when you're talking about the six new guys that they're implementing this year, and all of them, I mean, not necessarily all six, but you're going to have several key guys out of those newcomers that are starting or playing significant minutes and are part of your rotation that you're relying on throughout the season and when you get into Big East play. You know, it's not even going to be a situation like Miles Davis or James Farr last year where, okay, they're a big part of things early on in non-conference when you're trying to get them acclimated, but then you don't need them later on because you kind of already got your guys. They're going to need some of these guys to step up. I mean, Justin Martin's gone, so Trayvon Blewett or J.P. McCure, whoever it is going to have to step up and play these minutes and be ready to play, not just a few games early on against Bowling Green, but the whole season and when they get up against Creighton and the rest of the Big East. So I think the biggest thing that I'm going to be looking for, and I'll probably start, you know, we'll talk about this on other podcasts as soon as these guys get on campus and start just even playing open gym with the coaches not in the room, is just the level of competitiveness. How much toughness, how much competitiveness do these guys have? Because I don't think they're going to be very good without that. I think some of these younger guys, if they don't come in with the mentality that I'm starting or I'm taking these minutes and I don't care who's in front of me or who I'm playing against or who I'm playing with, if they don't have that mentality, they're going to be in trouble. But if they do, if a couple of them do at least, it's going to be real easy to sort out the minutes, figure out who's ready to play, and decide how good this team is going to be, because I think they have the talent to possibly be even better than they were last year, despite losing Samaje and Justin Martin, those guys. But they need a lot to come together and they need it quick, and they're going to need these young kids to be tough and ready to play their roles and ready to compete at a high level right off the bat. So it's more of a thing, I think, for me, where it's not how well do they know their stuff and how well are they making shots, because I think by the time the season gets around and they've played in Brazil and they've had these practices and they've had all of October and November to start practicing, they'll be there when it comes to that stuff. I'm more worried about the mental makeup of these kids and where they're at. Do they need a year to adjust to the college game and the competitiveness and the physicality like maybe a James Farr did? Or are they ready to play right away? That's going to be the most interesting part over the next couple months to me.
All right, Rick, before we move into the 2015 and 16 recruiting roundup, let me ask you this question. Let's put down a marker right now. Just dealing with the issue that you just talked about. We know Trayvon Blewett's probably going to start. Of the other five incoming freshmen, who do you, if you had to guess right now, who's the guy that's going to show that toughness, is going to be ready for rotation minutes from jump?
You know, I think it is going to be tough to keep J.P. McCure out of the lineup as well. And the reason I say that and I choose him is because I think he has a lot of confidence, and that's huge coming in as a freshman. When you believe you belong, that makes a big difference. Some of those other guys I mentioned, like a James Farr, I don't think when he got here his freshman year, he really felt like he was one of the better big men and that he deserved to be in the rotation. I truly don't. I mean, just watching the way he approached things in practice, I don't think he had that confidence in himself right away. I think he's earned it, or I think he's gained that as time has gone along. Last year, I think he was disappointed when he wasn't playing as much at the end of the year as he felt he should have. His freshman year, I didn't see that out of him. So I think J.P. McCure, because of the confidence he has, is the guy that I would say. But the other things I would look at is Sean O'Mara is going to have, I think, some of the physical strength needed, so he's a possibility. I think Edmund Sumner might have the most talent out of a lot of these guys and a lot of the skills that may translate, because I think he can already shoot and handle at this level, and those skills aren't even questionable when it comes to him. He's absolutely high major in those two areas, so I think he may be close to there. He's going to need more physical strength, but at the guard position, it's not always as important. And then, you know, a guy who's kind of physically ready and tough, Larry Austin. So that's going to be interesting too. I think this class is going to be so interesting to watch, because there's not huge separation between all these guys, and it is really, I expect it to be very competitive even in open gyms, because there's a lot of minutes up for grabs, and these kids have to know that. If they don't, this team may be in trouble, but if they do, it's going to be a fun offseason to watch and report on.
Yeah, I mean, my answer to the question would be the same as yours. I think McCure is, you know, he's got the athleticism, he's got the shot, he's a guy that can score, he's a guy that can play a couple positions, he can run the floor. He strikes me as a guy that's going to be ready from day one. But I would actually, I would throw Sean O'Mara into the mix, just because there's a guy who is senior year, especially, I think it was the state final in Illinois, they played Jahlil Okafor's team, right?
Right.
And yeah,
he played some big time.
Yeah, and he went head to head with one of the best big men in the country and more than held his own. So I mean, I look at Sean O'Mara and, you know, Chris Mack in historically has preferred a four man big rotation. You've got Matt, you've got Jalen, you've got James. There's a fourth spot right there. Mackinday London, probably too slight physically to fill that role next year. So I think O'Mara walks in and has to feel like he's got a real good chance to get rotation minutes from Jump Street. So,
well, and we can even talk about, you know, one of the things everyone's kind of asked about. I know a lot of people think that there's going to be red shirts out of this class. I would say I don't think that there necessarily are definitely going to be red shirts or definitely someone that red shirts. I think they're open to that possibility. And if I had to guess, I mean, I think it's pretty obvious after what we just said, Mackinday London's kind of the guy that both of us left out when talking about that. And I do think that if they red shirt someone, he'd probably be the most likely because one, he has a ton of upside still going forward. I don't think he's a guy that you'd come in freshman year and he's not ready and you'd give up on him. I think he's got a ton of upside. But two, for his position, when you're talking about he's going to have to play the four, he's so underweight. I mean, he's going to have to put on a ton of strength and weight before he's ready to hold his own at the four, even if it's just on the defensive end and in rebounding. That's going to be such a big transition for him strength-wise that I could see him redshirting, but I don't think any of them are guaranteed. I don't think it's a necessity that they redshirt someone. So I know that's been a big question. That's kind of my take on it is if anyone redshirts, maybe Mackinday.
Yeah, I mean, if you watch that Rise tournament at a high school in New York and then the final was at MSG. Mackinday, obviously super skilled, can shoot the ball, runs the floor well. But yeah, I mean, inside, I remember in the semifinal, the other team had a guy that probably weighed a good 3.5 bills. It was just bouncing him all over the gym every time they would go inside. So he's a kid that definitely needs to add strength. But Rick, we're getting close to the end of the show. Let's run through the current state of 2015 recruiting. First question for you. How many scholarships is X looking to fill at this point? How many guys do you think they'll take?
Well, we always know that this is a fluid situation, right? I mean, it seems like more often than not, they're over recruiting by at least one. Right now, they would have two scholarships in that class. I think there's a possibility they might. This isn't a great 2015 class, especially considering they've got so much coming in with 2016. They've addressed a lot of needs that there isn't any glaring one thing that they know that they need right now. So it doesn't give them that benefit where they can really get a jump start on all the. I mean, I think they're kind of looking at power players right now, whether they're four or fives. They're kind of looking at another post. And I've mentioned, I think they would probably like, or at least if it was me, I would like a more physical, athletic power forward that's a little bit different from Mackinday, whereas he's a stretch finesse shooter. I'd want more of maybe like a Jamel McLean, rebounder, dunker, physical type, low post that has a big body. That's what I would be looking for. And I think they've definitely targeted some of those guys in 15. But I could see them holding one of those 2015 scholarships back and just saving it for a transfer or saving it for 2016 where I think across the nation it's stronger, but especially in the Midwest and Ohio and Kentucky specifically, both have good, really good classes in 2016, Ohio especially. So I could see them maybe just saving an extra one from that for 2016 where one, they'll know what they need a little bit more ahead of time, and two, there's a little bit more talent to be had. So again, two scholarships, maybe only using one, but then again, they could recruit three spots for all I know. I mean, this thing is always changing, and obviously how the season plays out and whether guys look like they're going to be, you know, able to cut it or if guys are thinking about transferring or whatever else happens may change that number as well.
All right. Well, there's been a few names that you've thrown out there on the 2015 hot board. Maybe Xavier takes one guy, maybe they take two. We'll see how it goes. Brevin Pritzel is off the board. He committed to Wisconsin, which frankly you probably should have expected once you saw a picture of him and read his name. But who else is Xavier really keying in on that 2015 class at this point, Rick?
Well, I think Raymond Spalding, a guy I wrote about yesterday on the site, is one.
Great name, by the way. Great name.
You're very happy
about that. I love it so much. As I said, I just want to be able to yell Spalding like Judge Smales in Caddyshack. But go on. I'm sorry.
Well, I think he's one of kind of the top guys at the four, even though he's another thinner, more finesse type of four. He's not known for his toughness or his motor necessarily. I think he's got some physical tools that, well, I mean, Xavier's not the only high major. Indiana, Louisville, Indiana's offered Louisville recruiting him pretty heavily. He's from Louisville, so I think Louisville feels like they can wait to offer a little bit longer. He has physical tools that really jive with what Xavier wanted to do, especially on the defensive end when it comes to defending ball screens and getting out, hedging, recovering quickly, because he's got some of the best feet that I've seen out of any big man in the last couple classes. And he's super long with great he's got a weird ability to just get off the floor quickly from a flat footed stance. I mean, he's just standing under the rim and he elevates and blocks a shot from well above the rim. He does it all the time. He rebounds above the rim when he's playing hard. So I think he's just got so many physical tools that they really like what his upside is and what he could be in the future. But beyond that, I think they're also looking at some more physical post players, such as a Derek Pardon, who I actually wrote about today. Obviously, Issa Ahmad is a 6'7 guy who's more of like a combo forward. And again, it's kind of a little bit more like Makinde, but I think it's another guy who's so skilled that they feel like they can't pass up on him. That being said, I expect him to go to Ohio State. He's got the Ohio State, Wisconsin, Indiana, Maryland offers, and plenty more. So he's being recruited at a very high level. I think that's going to be a tough one to get in on. Derek Smits is a guy that we really haven't heard a lot about this spring. He's kind of under the radar right now, but he's more of a center, 6'11", 7 foot to keep an eye on. Obviously, Rick Smits' son. Kipper Nichols is another one on the 2015 hop board that I think Xavier sees him more as a three right now. I think he's more of a combo forward. If he's skilled enough, I haven't seen the skill level from him ball handling wise and shooting wise to play the three. But if he does have those abilities, which I think Xavier thinks he does, he'd be really good because he is 6'7" and strong, built kind of like maybe like a James Posey build, where he's not a super freak athlete, but long and kind of more of a smooth guy with a good 6'7", 6'8" build. So he'll be an interesting one to watch as well. There's plenty more names.
St. Ed's guy, right?
Yeah, St. Ed's. Obviously, they have an in there with Stainbrook, so that helps a little bit. But there's plenty more names on the hot board, and I've been talking about them at the events I've been visiting. You can go online and check those out. I think the other thing I would add here is that, and I'll probably update the hot board coming up here soon since there has been some drastic changes. With the addition of Larry Austin, they're no longer really recruiting a point guard in 2015. So some of those names that were originally on there, like Justin Jennifer, for instance, would be a guy that I'd say is probably not on the radar at all anymore. There are a couple guys like Jalen Coleman and KJ Walton who are more combo or two-ish type guards that I do think they would still take a two or maybe even probably not a three, but possibly a two or a three if they really feel it was a guy that they couldn't pass up. So that's kind of where things stand in 2015. I know that's kind of a quick overview of a very complex thing, but there's plenty more information online in the message boards and in the articles I've been writing. I've been to several events already this spring, and we'll continue to do so in July when the coaches are allowed back out. So we'll continue to keep you updated on that on the site.
Rick, that was tremendous. Also tremendous to read your byline on the Cincinnati Enquirer website these days, covering some Northern Kentucky high school sports. So congratulations to you on that that little career bump.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I'm doing what I can, Dan. Doing what I can.
All right. Well, I think that concludes this 51st edition of the Dana and Victory podcast. We'll try, I think, toward the end of next month to get back going, especially when the guys arrive on campus and maybe we have a little bit more of a read on how things look in open gyms. And then, of course, the Devereaux
League,
we'll hit that a couple times, I think, this summer.
Absolutely. All right.
Well, with UC having like a billion new players as well, I might even be able to convince my wife that that's an acceptable Saturday morning activity. So,
well, there you go. So for the 51st Randy Johnson edition of the Dana and Victory podcast, I'm Rick. He's Dan. Thanks for listening, everyone.